The Black Woods, Pursuing Racial Justice on the Adirondack Frontier, is a book that chronicles the dramatic history of the Black pioneers in New York's northern wilderness. The author, Amy Godin, is coming to the Sanctuary for Independent Media on April 30th for a 7 p.m. book talk on the Black Woods, and she joins me now. Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Wonderful.
So, Amy Godin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself as an author?
Well, I've been writing as long as I can remember, but I got interested in ethnic history, in particular in the Adirondacks, because when I moved to the region, to Saratoga Springs, I saw that nobody seemed to be writing about this. It's something I'd written about in Oregon when I lived there, and I thought, there's got to be a story here. There always is. Dig a little and you'll find something. And I wrote about so many different ethnic groups and ethnic migratory experiences in the region. And I also was struck by how little this story was represented in conventional Adirondack history, that I kept going until I was approached by Martha Swan of John Brown Lives, an activist who wanted to bring to life the story of John Brown in the Adirondacks when he lived at North Elba and came to help a group of Black settlers in the region. And I didn't think there was any story there at all. I'd read about it, and it seemed as if the folks who came didn't stay very long and didn't do very well and were pretty much missing in action after a few years. But I said I'd do a little homework and we'd see if we had an exhibit on this or not. And I turned up so much more than I expected that I realized I had not just an exhibition, but the beginnings of a book project. And that's what led me to publish this book and discover so much about this lost history.
Oh, it began as an exhibition. What was the exhibition like, and how did that evolve into the book?
Well, the exhibition started, it's called Dreaming of Timbuktu, and it's had a long shelf life. It opened in 2000 at the Adirondack, then it was called the Adirondack Museum. Now it's the Adirondack Experience, and it traveled all over the state and eventually found a permanent home at the John Brown Farm State Historic Site in North Elba, because the story is so original for so many people who come to the region and don't expect to discover any particle of Black history that connects to the Adirondack region, which is sort of famously a non-ethnic world, an all-white world in most people's minds who come there except for the experience of all the many prisons in the region. And that's how people associated with the Black experience. And here was this other completely fresh story of a Black farm group that moves north in stages over many years to farm, but also to gain voting rights. So it's a civil rights story in the heart of the Adirondacks. And this too came as a stunner for many people. So the exhibition has just had a long standing currency that just hasn't faded, because all the issues that provoked this initiative are still with us. They haven't died away at all. So that gave rise to the book. I just thought, I can go with this, go deeper, go wider, take it as far as I can get, and we'll see what happens. And what came out of it was the book you have in your hand.
So it evolved, you got more information, it turned into The Black Woods, Pursuing Racial Justice on the Adirondack Frontier. What would you like us to know about the book, and how does it expand on that exhibition?
Well, the exhibition really focuses on the community within the neighborhood of John Brown's farm, which is still there, of course. It's the heart of the historic site. And while we don't know exactly where the Black settlers lived, because none of their farms are still around, they were poor farms, they weren't made to last, and they didn't last over such a long span of time. Old farms have a way of falling apart. So the material culture in this story is very thin on the ground, but the literary culture, the written culture of how these farmers, their families, their children left paper records in legal documents, in school records, voting records, tax records, and pension appeal records after the Civil War is quite rich. And that's where I found the heart of my story. And that just kept me going. You asked about the book in particular, though. It's really a three-part book. The first part is about why this was an important initiative in the first place, because you could only vote if you were Black at mid-century in New York State if you owned $250 worth of landed property, which rule effectively disenfranchised all of Black New York. And so the effort to disperse land to 3,000 Black New Yorkers was an attempt to enfranchise Black New Yorkers and give them political power, the right to vote and the right to self-representation. So that's the first part of the book. It sets the story and the reason for it, the rationale, why it held so much appeal for so many Black activists and radical anti-slavery reformers. And the second part deals with the experience of the grantees on the land as settlers, those few hundred who actually move, who set up there, who build their farms. Most of them don't stay. Most of them move on. Many move back to the cities they came from, and a good number move to other farms and continue farming elsewhere. That part of the book deals with the lived experience of the Black grantees. And the third part deals with this story in memory, how it was represented on the page, or more accurately, how it was scrubbed and diminished and denigrated and denied, and how far we've come in our effort to retrieve it and recover it in the last decade or two. Three parts. That's why it's so long.
In your book, you have mentions of Timbuktu, yeah. Freeman's Home, Blackville, and you mentioned that the Black enclaves were forgotten, but I imagine that this incredible history has left a legacy beyond just the story. How have you discovered examples of the legacy that has been left in the Adirondacks?
Well, we would know nothing, probably, if it weren't for the presence of John Brown, brief as it was, in North Elba, because his impact on American history was so profound and transformative that biographers, of course, have to deal with his interest in his Black neighbors and the reason he came to the Adirondacks in the first place, which was to help them on their farms, help them identify their land, help them manage their first couple of winters. He had meant to stay a good deal longer, but the call to action, where slavery was alive and well, you know, inspired him to go west and to the south and to Harper's Ferry eventually. And biographers dealt with this story glancingly, but at least they acknowledged it. So thanks to local historians, county historians, and John Brown's biographers, we know what we do about Blacksville, and we know what we do about Timbuktu at the beginning. They're the ones who opened the windows to this story. It's a very marginal view, and there's much more to be learned, but we get through that little porthole to get to the rest. And I found the rest not on maps, because these settlements, which had Black names, may be given to them by their neighbors or maybe by the Black settlers themselves. They weren't mapped. They're never on the map. So even where they are isn't absolutely clear. Freeman's Home, however, lives on as in botanical reports from the Adirondacks. It's a place to go to find certain wildflowers, some of which are linked to the vanished cabins that belong to the Black settlers. Negro Brook, which once bore a racist name and now has the name, thanks to a local activist, Kurt Steger, of a Black grantee, John Thomas. It's now called John Thomas Brook. that honors the black settlers. That's a real win. There are three historic signs now that have gone up in the last 5 years that honor the presence of black settlers in the Adirondacks. So there's now a tangible map in a way where you can at least get the idea of where the rough vicinities of these neighborhoods were. Nothing is exact, but you know where people moved to and where they gave it a fighting chance or a try. And that's as good as it gets right now. I have a friend, Hadley Kruzik-Aaron, who's busy doing archaeological work, looking for the home and the remains of the home deep in the ground of a beloved farmer settler in the region who was John Brown's good friend, Lyman Epps. And one day she's going to publish an amazing book about what she finds in her archaeological approach. Genealogists have been hard at it and have found descendants of the black grantees in the region, mostly all gone now, but up into this century, people were living in the Adirondacks who had behind them in their ancestry Gerrit Smith grantees who got land from Gerrit Smith. He gave away 120,000 acres. That's a lot of land. Yeah.
Amy Godin, it's been such a pleasure to talk with you, and we're very excited for your book talk on the Black Woods on Tuesday, April 30th. Before I let you go, what can visitors expect from that event, from your book talk?
Oh, I usually try to pitch what I'm talking about to the audience I'm speaking to, and in this case, I'll be talking to a lot of folks from Troy in the Capital District. It turns out that Troy was probably the greatest provider of settlers, not just grantees, but grantee settlers who actually moved into the Adirondacks. And I'll talk about why was Troy such a pivotal force? Why? What were the influences that inspired the grantees from Troy, not New York City, not Utica, not Ithaca, not Brooklyn, but Troy, New York, to go into the Adirondack Woods and try and make a life there? And that'll be a special emphasis in the talk I give at the sanctuary, to which I'm really looking forward.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
What a pleasure. Thank you.